this. Hey,
have you seen his Instagram?
They need
this Felgert mask.
They don't use crank enough.
On 98.5.
Yeah, not really.
The Sports Hub.
I've heard you say that a couple times in the last few days, which is coach better. Is there something that you look at and say that, you know, specifically you could do differently than what you've done so far?
You know, Mark, I've always thought the role of a coach. And first of all, I think when you're coaching a team, the sooner you can get to just to not having to figure out rotations as much and not having to figure out who plays best together and how things fit and all those things. And you just start coaching basketball and you're coaching the technical parts of the game. That's when you can really roll. But until then, I think the role of a coach is to find the best of everyone. We're not getting that, so that's on me. And that's kind of what I've been saying. Like you see the great teams around is they get the most out of every single guy on that roster for what they do best. And we're not there yet. Until we are, then, you know, I'll have a lot to work on.
Hour two, Felgert Mass. If you listen to the top of the hour update there from Jim Murray as well. He played a cut from Stevens about figuring out the combinations. This has occurred to me. You know what they're waiting on, Mass? You know what they're waiting on with the combinations?
Do tell. Players to try hard?
Jimmy?
Analytics. They're waiting for data.
They're waiting for the nerds. They need to have a bunch of sample size out there to find out the right combinations because you know this is a huge part of basketball advanced analytics. And that's what combinations produce what results. And, you know, is it...
Per 100, per 36.
I was going to say per 36-minute numbers... Per 36 plus minus.
Per 100 possessions.
Per 100 possessions sort of things. And before you start to determine who plays best with each other and what five group combinations and what three group combinations are best, you've got to have a large enough sample size. And so what I believe that they're waiting for is a sample size. And then the nerds weigh in and say, well, Marcus Morris is better with Tatum out, but he's better with Marcus Smart in, and Hayward plays the best. The numbers show Hayward and Smart isn't as good as Hayward-Rozier per 100 possessions. Per 36 minutes, what you want is Tatum, Brown. They're waiting for all that stuff to come in.
Great. I mean, that makes me feel better.
I mean, that's just my guess. I mean, that's what I think.
Well, it's probably part of it.
It's such a huge part of how Stevens operates and so many of the good teams operate now. That thing, I think they're waiting for the nerds.
God, that's annoying.
I mean, that is annoying.
It's just my guess.
Yeah. And now, look, there were other things that he said in there about how, you know, I can't worry about what the rotations are until we get everybody playing right. Like, he also said that. And I heard that and said, he doesn't think they're trying. He doesn't think they're trying hard enough. And so maybe that's another way of saying the data's not good until they start trying. Because the data's going to suck on this because we're not trying and we don't know yet. So, but maybe it all ties to the same thing. I get the sense that, you know, he feels like they're half-assing it. And I think he's right. I, generally speaking, you know, he made the comments about the defensive rating that they have, and he can't believe how high it is. And again, based on how it looked in that Portland game, I think he's right. They half-ass it half the time. And it's one-on-one hero ball at the other end way too often. So it feels to me like they get their heads wedged between their cheeks half the time. Like they're, you know, I come back to that comment with Kyrie and they're not as good as they think they are. They play like they got five rings. They play like they're Golden State. Jaylen Brown's already got his rings. He's got the safe combination. They're all stashed away in there. All five of his rings.
Jaylen, five rings, Brown. That's it. So is there a leadership void on the team, do you think, Mass?
I think there is a little bit, at least at the moment. Yeah, I do. And I think that's what that Kyrie comment was the other day, that nobody knows what to do because they need somebody to start calling people out, whether it's a player, whether it's a coach. And if you want to go back again, all I can compare it to now is going back to 08. That's the last championship team they had. Garnett was vocal. Garnett held everybody accountable on that team. And so whether you loved him or hate him, he led them. And if he didn't, I think Doc was also vocal.
And LeBron, love him or hate him, did the same thing in Cleveland, and Kyrie hated him.
He doesn't want to do it. Kyrie doesn't want to do it.
So this is something Beadle asked Stevens about as well. Stevens, I'm with Beadle and Zoe once a week here on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Catch the full interview on 98.5thesportshub.com. Here's Beadle asking Stevens about the Kyrie cut, about we need a 14, 15-year veteran or leadership void.
You know, Kyrie's comments, if I could just go back to that, sort of indicate that he thinks there's... you know, a lack of a leader. And this is not something that we've ever really discussed about you or your team. Do you think that there is a lack of a leader among the players on the team?
Well, I don't want to make inferences for what people say. So, you know, I don't want to get caught up in a conversation without hearing someone say that. But I think that we've got a lot of guys that are more than capable of being very good leaders, have been very good leaders in the past, and have always stepped up when times have gotten tough. And I think one of the great signs about our team is, you know, you don't see a lot of extra outside stuff, even when we're struggling. You know, it's all, yes, we can be better. Yes, we know we need to do it. I think there's a good accountability on our team, and I think that that's a huge, huge part of internal leadership.
Okay, we'll see how that plays out.
So I wonder about that comment, though, when he says, you know, guys have been good or have been in the past and what have you, and then he says, you know, one thing you see on our team is you don't see a lot of outside stuff. Is that a way of telling Kyrie to shut up? Like, Kyrie, what are you doing talking about what we need? How about just let's show up and play? And look, they've had their share of little things, little flare-ups like that. Isaiah Thomas called them out. You know, Jay Crowder called them out when he was here. It's not like it's unprecedented. There were guys who spoke up and questioned the coaching and the rotations and everything else. So, but then it got reined in and they got it under control. So now they're facing that. I just don't think Kyrie wants to be the guy to kick people in the ass. And I don't know, Stevens has never done it, at least not at the NBA.
All right, well, let me give you one more Stevens cut, because, I mean, it starts with how they're playing, and he's going to say that here. But the one everyone's talking about, and I think, as many others do, that Hayward has to go to the bench, or Brown has to go to the bench, or Tatum has to go to the bench, and either Smart or Baines have to be in there to give you a little bit more balance, fewer mouths to feed, more of a role player there with the shooters, and a clearly defined role on the second unit, etc. And a lot of people have started with Hayward. Hayward was even quoted today in the Boston Globe as saying he'd be open to doing it. Whatever helps the team, he would do it, which is encouraging. Good for him. Stevens was asked about that.
Gordon Hayward has said that he would be okay with a role change or coming off the bench. Have you considered either of those things for him?
Considered it for everybody. You know, I think that, but I don't think right now it's as much about our rotations. It's about everybody getting a little bit better. I do think there are times of the game where certain guys need to be in together, and maybe there's some combinations that we can have on the bench while others are in the game. And those are things that we're learning about this group. The starting unit has been interesting because it's struggled out of the gate in a couple of games, and then it was dynamite out of the gate in a couple of games. Just needs some consistency. And so whether that is changing something in the starting lineup, Gordon, or otherwise, you know, you consider all of those things. But right now, as I told our guys at halftime of the Portland game, you know, one of the things that is our struggle is it's hard to tell what adjustments we need to make until we play the right way. And you can see when we're really urgent that we're playing the right way, we're pretty good.
So
we just need to increase our urgency. That's kind of the bottom line of it. And then we'll figure out, you know, what our rotations need to be. But obviously, you're always thinking about those changes. And inevitably, as you get into the playoffs in the NBA, you're going to make those changes anyways.
Yeah.
And so everybody's got to be on their toes, no matter who you are.
G'day. It doesn't feel like anything's imminent.
No. No, not at all.
No, it doesn't. No. And look, I what I've settled on is Irving, Hayward, Tatum. Those three guys can't be on the floor at the same time. Too many guys who want the ball and that people play off the ball on that. One of them has to sit. And it's not going to be Kyrie. I mean, there'll be time when Kyrie's out of the game. And if you want Tatum and Hayward out there together at that time, fine. All three of them? No.
I just don't understand why right now, until this is fixed or they figure out what the rotations are the best ones, why some fans would be adverse to having Hayward go to the bench. It would alleviate some of the problems that they have there.
Are fans adverse to it?
Seems that way on social media.
Does, like, it,
oh,
really?
God, oh, yeah, God forbid that Hayward go to the bench right now. No, he has to find his shot. No, he just have to let him get back into shape.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be fair to him. No, right now it would alleviate the problem of Terry Rozier's not really a distributor. He's best when he can score and play off the ball. Well, with Hayward on the bench and playing with that unit, you would be able to do that. You would get that. That would help some of the scoring that they have with the secondary unit. But no, you can't have it because it's Gordon Hayward and he's the big free agent. It wouldn't be fair to him. Only played 6 minutes last year and blah, blah, blah.
I think he's the obvious guy.
So do I.
I mean, just by the pace at which he plays at and where he's at right now, he's the worst of the three.
Yeah, right now. Yeah, and then if it changes later, it changes. And from everything you hear about Hayward, at least, you know, look, I try to educate myself where I can in terms of how they perceive him, how they think of him. They think he's a guy they can run the half-court offense through. And so if that's true, put him at the second unit. Give him the ball. As soon as you get over the line, give him the ball and let everyone start running around. And, you know, you set your picks and run your offense and let Hayward find the open man or create his own shot. If he can, and against the second unit, it'll be a little easier for him. Do it. Do it with him.
Okay, folks, we got these Celtics items on the table. I want to get to Rask and Cassidy coming up next. I'll give you a quick Bruins thought. And we have all the pace of play and baseball stuff, manager of the year items still on the table. I promise to all your phones with a quick little Bruins check-in right after these words. So don't go anywhere here on Felger and Mass.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Listening to Felger and Mass.
Doesn't always have to be ha-ha-hee-hee.
Oh, love it.
98.5 The Sports Hub.
Well, listen, he's been here a long time. He's a big part of the team, so good to see him back. Hopefully the time away was what he needed to get squared away, and he's ready to go back to work. That's kind of the approach we're going to take with him and see how it plays out going forward.
I thought Cassidy's reaction to Rask yesterday was cool, meaning not like hip and cool, but like
icy.
Yeah, not quite, you know, so I didn't want to go all that.
Okay,
so it's not quite to ice,
frigid and ice is,
yeah, a little,
you know,
yeah, it's just a little, which again leads me to just my guesses is that Rask's off ice problem was self-inflicted, or, you know,
looked at as a pain in the ass,
or you know, I just don't want to say the wrong thing because I don't know what it is.
Well, sure, but it also suggests that there's a pattern of something here, and it might not be one thing. The point is that they've come to deem him as unreliable.
My guess, and again, my read, and that's all that this is based on Cassidy's tone and the fact that the team called it a leave of absence in the first place and not flu-like symptoms, leads me to believe that the team said, huh, all right, yeah, go ahead, Tuca. Yep, take the weekend. Fine. We'll call to leave. Okay. Let us know when you're all set, buddy. And that it's sort of on the list of, oh, God, this guy. How much do we pay him? And how many games has he tapped out of? And how has his play gone? And now we got back-to-back games before a big road trip. And he's got a bag out of the weekend because of dot, dot, dot. And whatever dot, dot, dot is, I wonder if they think is, you know, something less than a tragedy or something. I mean, you see what I'm saying?
Sure.
And so I think this is just sort of added to the team's frustration. How could the team not be frustrated with Rask? I mean, of course they are. And now they get, asking a 33-year-old Yaroslav Halak to play back-to-back nights in the regular season, the teams don't want to do that. Teams do not want to do that. They do not play veteran goalies on back-to-back nights in the regular season. That rarely happens. But the guys in Providence aren't ready. The Bruins are, you know, still fighting for a playoff berth here going into Thanksgiving. And so those points are important to the team. So they got to play Halak twice, back-to-back, right before they go out on the road because Rask, dot, dot, dot. So I think this is a big crossroads for Tuukka Rask. I think he's lost his job for all intents and purposes. I think Halak's the starter till he plays his way out of it. And how is Rask going to respond? That's not my question. How is he going to respond? Because this thing that he missed for may be embarrassing to him. Maybe it falls in those lines. I don't know that he had to ask for time off. Maybe he's embarrassing to him. And his play has been so spotty the last couple of years, never mind this season. And it feels like he's lost his job. That, how does he respond to this? I'm a big believer. You know this. Every dog has his day, and I'm done writing people off entirely. I told you, and I said during the regular season, David Price was going to have his breakthrough. Not that I thought he'd do what he did, but I thought he'd win one at least. I've seen John Lackey do it. I've seen David Price do it. I've seen Peyton Manning do it. I've seen most everyone do it. So I will not rule out Tuukka Rask just finally having it all come together and him going on, him fulfilling his potential as a really elite NHL goalie. He has that kind of ability to be that guy. Can this be the thing that gets him there? Look, it took Tim Thomas. They tried to trade Tim Thomas in 2011. That got him all pissed off. Remember this?
Sure.
And, you know, it was part of the thing that sent him off the deep end, but it motivated the crap out of him. He lost his job in 2010. They tried to trade him. They had something lined up for him, and I think it was Eric Gagne in Philadelphia. And it fell apart at the last minute. And so
Simone Gagne,
whoever it was. And Rask comes back, wins the job, and goes, you know, the rest is history. So hopefully this motivates Rask. Hopefully he's a little embarrassed or feels like he really has something to prove or that he nearly let the team down or that he's lost his job and his career is at a crossroads. Like, hopefully that all combines to get this guy to finally play to his capability.
I mean, look, at some point in your life, you got to sort of take ownership for everything you do, right? And so, I don't know, he used the phrase, what was the phrase he used yesterday? Make things right?
Uh-huh.
At home? It sounds to me like, you know, he said he's a hockey player and a family man, and if he's making things right, and again, I don't know what that means, but it doesn't feel to me like he's having success at either right now. So that is the kind of thing that might make you sort of look in the mirror and say, what am I doing? So hopefully you snap out of it. Like, you know, you can't write him off.
Okay,
How could you? The guy's a pro athlete, right? There's something there.
That's my take, and he's talented. That's my take. I'm not writing him off. I'd trade him tomorrow if someone gives me a good offer, but I'm not writing him off. Meaning, if you can't trade him and you can't make a good deal, and I doubt you can, that he's going to get another crack and he's got a chance to do something with it. And let's see what happens. I'm not going to write him off. He's too good.
I mean, I'll tell you, too, like, you mentioned this yesterday, but go back to that comment.
He's just played like such ass.
Oh, he's been awful.
For so long, really. Really. I mean, it started a couple of years ago. But the guy's got the ability. So let's see.
I mean, again, that comment that Cassidy made last week about when, you know, that he hasn't played well and you start looking at the offseason and the way he conditions or trains during the summer. Like, it makes you wonder when they look at him and go, Tuukka, what exactly are you doing when you leave here in the spring? What are you doing the rest of the year before you come back? Time for us to talk about it.
So that was a statement, no question about it. All right, so there's your Rask take to your phones as promised. Pete in Delaware on the Celts. Hi, Pete.
Hey, guys, how are you? The one thing I didn't anticipate was the Kobe factor. Not only is Kobe affecting Jason Tatum, but if you remember, it was Kyrie Irving a year ago after that bad summer he had. And I just don't like the way they're playing. It just looks like Kobe ball.
Okay, so the Kobe factor is interesting. If you missed it yesterday, Jason Tatum went and worked one-on-one with Kobe Bryant quite a bit this offseason. Kobe Bryant also has ties to Gordon Hayward. I don't know if I feel the Gordon Hayward, you know, Kobe infection as much because I think Gordon Hayward's passed on a lot of shots. Jason Tatum?
Oh, you can see it.
Oh, my God. Even like the step back, even though sort of the way he's playing it has the, you know, little Kobe reek.
No, totally. Look, and there are moments where you look at Tatum and you go, holy crap, wow. There was that stretch in the Portland game where I think in the span of a minute he made like 4 3-pointers.
Oh, yeah.
It was ridiculous. And one of them was with a guy all over him. I mean, he was out on the right wing, you know, 2 dribble step back with a guy in his face and buried it. And you went, holy crap. So he has that capability when he gets rolling. But then there are other times you watch him and say, dude, there were 4 other people on the floor wearing the same color as you. Pass the freaking ball.
Andy and Groton on Pace of Play. Hi, Andy.
Yes, yeah. I was just wondering, have you fellas heard about the idea that the team that takes the lead only gets 2 outs until the other team gets the lead?
Yes. I mean, that's...
You don't like it. That's a ha-ha, huh?
No.
I don't know. What that... You know, I mean, you want to watch a game go on for a day, go to a cricket game, for Christ's sake. You know what I mean? I don't understand. The second question I have...
Well, Andy, can I just stop there? Because I'd never heard that. I laughed because that sounded outrageous. I am for any radical idea that they want to throw out there. I think baseball needs radical change.
Me too.
I'll take the step-by-step if that's what it takes to get to radical. But if you're asking me, I would abolish extra innings right now and bring out the Nets into a home run derby or figure in ties. Like, I would do that right now. I'd go to 7 innings right now. I've told you, I think the ultimate trend of the sport is 3 balls, 2 strikes, 2 outs, 6 innings. Lop off a full third of the game. Like, I think that's ultimately where the thing might end up. So I'll do that tomorrow if you want. I just am sort of more realistic about it. What's this thing about going to 2 outs if you're up?
Think of it as like the Pro Bowl, right? When you know that in a team that's losing the Pro Bowl, they score. They get, if they're still losing, they get the ball again.
I didn't even know they did that.
Okay. So in the Pro Bowl, that's the way. I don't know if they still do it that way. They used to anyway. So in baseball, someone threw out a proposal that was radical, that if you're ahead, When you come to bat, you only get two outs.
Ha! And I laugh again because that sounds so crazy. I'll take it.
You know what? I didn't mind it. I think it's actually a half-decent idea.
Less outs. Fewer outs. Less game.
And also, it addresses a competitive balance issue. Like, if you have a high payroll team against a low payroll team, fine. You're gonna get fewer outs if you're in the lead the whole game.
I'm just laughing because I feel like that has no prayer.
No, it has no chance. Of course not. But I'm in. I mean, tell me, put the runner on second base in extra innings. I'm in.
Okay, back to your thoughts after Murray's update. Don't go anywhere.
This is Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub. BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
At the end of your ride home, you'll be all caught up.
If you get suspended again, you're going to miss playoff time, or you're going to miss time in the playoffs.
Or questioning your judgment.
Sorry I brought it up.
Felger and Mass, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
All right, back to the phones. JD in Springfield has a Bruins thought on Tuukka Rask. Go ahead, JD.
Yeah, how are you doing, guys?
Good.
Happy Celtics Bruins Wednesday there. Yeah, this is a question for Maz, because I know Maz is kind of like the legacy guy. Like, considering, I mean, I think Rask is basically toast. You know, I don't think he's going to, you know, maybe at the trade deadline, they'll get rid of him. They'll get rid of him in the offseason. But what's going to be this guy's legacy? I mean, he signed an 8-year deal, had basically two good years in the beginning of the deal, and just slowly faded. I mean where does this guy go from here?
So I don't know why I'm the legacy guy.
Yeah,
what does
go
that
ahead.
Mean?
I mean, well, go ahead, legacy man.
I mean, if he doesn't win a championship here, or especially at the end, play something closer to his level of ability, he's going to go down as a massive disappointment. Huge. You don't invest that kind of money in a player to not have him bring you to the highest levels. End of story for me.
Go down as a guy that couldn't win the big one. Let's see, he'll be one of those guys. Because he was a good goalie. I mean, he won the Vezina. He's, you know, sniffing around the Vezina for a couple of years. Like, I bet if you put up his regular season numbers and put them all together, he might get Hall of Fame consideration. Honestly, I mean, I don't know how. I think the threshold's pretty low in that league. But he never won. I'm curious if there's anything that'll, you know, because there was a time he was much better than this. I mean, there's no question about it. Is there anything that's going to
jar him loose, snap him out of it,
right? Can anything snap this guy out of it?
Feels to me like he's at a crossroads, and it's, you know, I hate to say it this way because you sound like such a jerk, but it's time to grow up. I mean, that's what it feels like. Like, time to grow up. You know, you're 33 years old. You're fighting for your career now. Do you want it or not?
It's time just to play to your capabilities. Mike in Danvers on the Celts. Hi, Mike.
Hey, guys. How are you? How are you today? Listen, I have a thought on this whole Kyrie thing. Usually when you hear a player all of a sudden come out and say, I want to stay with this team, sometimes that can indicate that they feel that there's something, some kind of injury, and they'd rather have stability than be the star. I'm not convinced that Kyrie's knee is good, and I don't think Danny is either. And I think they're just having a lot of patience right now, and I think at the trade deadline, I think you're going to see Kyrie and Jaylen Brown go to New Orleans, Anthony Davis.
Okay, you just gave us too much. Kyrie's knee looks fine to me.
He's a dynamite lately.
And I'm one of these people that, you know, I'm not willing to, I still have questions about Kyrie's long-term health and can he get through a full grind of a season and all of that. I think he has to prove that to you. But if you ask me how has he looked the last couple weeks, ever since Tommy Heinsohn called him fat, he's gone a million miles an hour out there. He's looked tremendous.
And he's averaged 28 points a game during that span.
He's been great.
He's shooting almost 50% from three-point land.
So you can motivate even the guys at the highest level. A little something turns them on, and there you go. So maybe there's your Rask comparison. Gary, Tennessee, quickly on the manager of the year.
You talking to me?
I'm talking to you, Gary.
All right. Yeah, I'm with you, Felger, on these postseason awards, you know, for manager of the year and all of that. Who cares?
I don't
care if Aaron Boone. I don't care if Aaron Boone won manager of the year. He won 100 games. Maybe he should get it. Who cares?
He got a couple votes, if you can believe it. He did.
Yeah. I mean, the main thing is I've been a Red Sox fan since 1966. winning the World Series, that's end all be all. Who cares? Everybody else can win Cy Young Award and all that. So I don't understand why these guys get all upset about Cora not getting Manager of the Year. We got the World Series. That's all that counts.
I'm with you, baby. I'm with you. Maybe it's just getting greedy. You want it all.
Which do you think Cora would rather have? I mean, he had bonuses in his contract for going deep in the playoffs. You think he gives a rat's ass about the Manager of the Year?
I sure hope not. Kevin in Rhode Island on baseball. Go ahead, Kevin.
Hey, guys. Love the show. I've listened since Maz didn't believe in the Red Sox in 2013. This is piggybacking on that epic Mad Dog rant. Why don't TV and advertisers, why do they let the games go late rather than putting them on earlier? I mean, especially in today's day and age when everyone can watch on their phone, they're watching at work anyway. No one's watching when they're asleep. So I don't understand why we wouldn't bump it up earlier and not instead of later.
Okay, so it's all dictated by the networks. Thank you, Kevin, for the call. To me, it's all network-driven. If you listen to the Mad Dog rant, the TBS wanted games at a certain time so they could get some lead into their primetime lineup and so not be so separated from the primetime lineup. And TBS, which is really CBS, pays the bills. And so the leagues put the games wherever the networks want them.
Absolutely.
Period, story over.
Yeah, TV's got the power. It has for a long time.
And also, a 7 o'clock start here, which is what it should be, is a 4 o'clock start in L.A. That's not as good for the West Coast audience. So you start at 9 or 10. It's a way to balance out both coasts. I mean, I sort of get it. If I were the networks, I would put more emphasis on the East Coast than the West because I think the West is a softer market.
And it's also, isn't the East more concentrated?
Yeah, I mean, there's more people, for sure. I don't know. California's got a ton of people. I'm not sure about that. I think it's more of your core audiences out here than out there.
Right.
But again, that's not going to change. Unfortunately, that's not going to change.
See, you would think, though, that I half get what the caller says, and forgive me here, but, you know, the games are running later and longer. So would you rather have the audience at the end of the game or the beginning?
I mean, believe me.
I'd rather have them at the end. So why not start the game at 7:30?
Short-sighted.
Like, just take the bullet for the first half hour. What are you really sacrificing?
Tell the rights holders or tell the broadcast partners.
I mean, it doesn't feel like it should be that tough.
So here's something Maz wanted to hit on in relation to this. And this was written at the tail end of the World Series. Sports Business Daily wrote, because the ratings were down in the World Series across the board, nationally, locally, all of it. Fox Sports attributed this year's surprising audience drop for the World Series to several factors, including a diminished national appeal for the Red Sox. In addition to reduced TV viewership industry-wide, cord cutting, smaller tune-in from the New York and Chicago markets, which had been there the last couple of years, and a heightened news cycle driven by mail bombs and Pittsburgh mass shooting stories, which I'm sorry, as tragic and as awful as those things were, there's always news. I hate when leagues say this. Well, that this was going. There's always something going on.
Agreed.
There's always a big news event. Bullcrap. I'll give you the New York Chicago thing. No problem. The cord cutting is self evident, but the diminished national appeal for the Red Sox.
See, that's the one that caught my attention.
Let me just give you the quote quickly. Fox Sports executive Mike Mulvihill said it's possible the national appeal of the Red Sox is not quite what it was in 04, 07, or even 13. And we are seeing less this year from New York and Chicago markets, two very important markets after the Yankees and Cubs bowed out early. Okay, but your thought on the Red Sox?
So that's the part of the story that caught my attention is that the Red Sox don't have the appeal that they used to. And that's on a national level, and I think that that's true. I mean, so let's face it. If we're going to sit here and say that the Cubs story in 2016 had national appeal because the Cubs hadn't won in 100 years, well, don't we have to say the same thing about the Red Sox in 04?
Of course.
It was a major national story that the Red Sox hadn't won. And what interests me more than anything is the fact that the local numbers went down since 2013. And the more I think about it, I think Murray was onto something with the Marathon bombing. I mean, that was a significant major terrorist attack on American soil. There was a national element to that story as well, and I think it was a local one too. But the bottom line is, even here, forget nationally, even here, the Red Sox don't have the appeal that they used to.
So what's your take?
I think he's right. That's what I'm telling you.
Okay, but why? I guess I was asking why. Why do you think that is?
I think they've lost some of the, you know, a lot of the identity that went with lovable losers, sort of the Cubs. That went out, and I think you've seen it sort of deteriorate little by little, and 2013 was the exception rather than the rule. 2013 sort of trended in the other direction because of the Marathon. I'm with Murray on this.
Outlier.
Yeah, 2013 was an outlier. The fact that this team, this year, as good as they were, as entertaining as they were, actually had less appeal in Boston. In Boston. Then the team in 2013 should tell you plenty about where the Red Sox and baseball are headed.
Okay, so there's your thought on that. Meanwhile, we're mixing in Rask, Celtics, baseball here this hour. Paul Perillo standing by for the top of the four. Meanwhile, yesterday, I brought this up, and Maz nearly puked all over the mic. But when Kyrie Irving said that what this team needs is a 14-year, 15-year veteran, and I said to Jimmy, I asked, how many years has Carmelo Anthony been in the league? The answer was 16, 15?
This is his
16th. Yeah, 02 he came into the year.
Yeah. I said, was he referring to Carmelo Anthony? So was he referring to Carmelo Anthony? And wouldn't you know it, people have started to look at that. Are the Celtics looking at Carmelo Anthony?
Oh, my God.
Does Kyrie Irving want Carmelo Anthony? Because Kyrie Irving doesn't want to be the veteran leader, the guy to say anything in the locker room. Do you want Carmelo to come in and do it? Is that what we're talking about? And if Carmelo Anthony is in, what does that mean for Maz? We have the answer to that coming up right after this.
Felger and Maz.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
I hate jokes. We're not taking jokes.
That joke blew.
It's Felger and Mass, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
I hate jokes. We're not taking jokes.
That joke blew.
It's Felger and Mass, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
If Carmelo Anthony is involved in any way, shape, or form, I'm out. I am out. I want nothing to do with that guy. Zero.
Zero.
Zip. Zip. Nada.
Nada.
Nada. Carmelo in. Tony Maz out.
Got it?
Out.
Out of
my dreams. I'm out. In
my car.
I want nothing to do with him. Out.
Out of my dreams.
The guy's a loser.
In
my car. Everywhere he goes, they lose. Out.
Out of my life.
Everywhere he goes, they lose.
In
no Carmelo. Again, just to be clear, Carmelo in, Tony Maz out. No Carmelo. Carmelo in, Tony Maz out.
That's an oldie but a goodie. Something tells me you haven't changed your mind on that, man.
No chance. I can't believe that there's any truth to that. I mean, I'm not telling you that there isn't any truth. If there is, I'm inclined to pick up the phone, call the Celtics switchboard, do a conference call with Wick, Danny, and Steven and say, what the F are you guys doing? Seriously, you really want Carmelo Anthony? As if they don't have enough mouths to feed on this team as it is, as you put it. You're going to add in that guy who's the biggest mouth in the league in terms of ball hogging and everything else? Oh, God, you want nothing to do with that guy.
There's no way it can be true, but I am a little concerned because Gary Washburn did have a column in the Globe today basically alluding to the fact, hey, maybe this is what Kyrie Irving was talking about, Carmelo Anthony, and that makes me sick. This guy, at this point in his career, washed up, shoot first, me first, doesn't want to play defense type of player. He would never fit here.
Look what he's done to Houston.
Maz, what do you think Danny Ange would say?
Oh, we'll Danny Ange would take him in a second.
Danny Ange is a talent guy. He didn't
sure,
care about
absolutely.
All that stuff.
Yeah, he would take a shot on it. Absolutely he would. And then see how it goes. I just don't see how it's a fit here. Like, you know, and when Kyrie says we need a 14-15-year vet to come in and keep things in perspective for us, Carmelo's the guy to keep things in perspective?
Oof.
What does Carmelo know? He's never won jack.
Oh, he's a gold medalist.
Oh, God, please. Like, he's the worst guy to bring in. He'll make things worse. Like, that's like giving... I was going to say,
what you got, Matt?
Well, there's that old expression that Bill Cosby says, cocaine enhances your personality. Well, what if you're an a-hole? Like, so this is what Carmelo is. Like, if your team sucks and you add him, what do you think is going to happen? It's going to get worse. It amplifies all your worst qualities.
Do you think they're serious about it?
No.
Jimmy Stewart, what do you think?
I think they were interested in Carmelo Anthony a few years ago. I don't think they are now.
I would say no for this reason. Don't they have enough guys who need the ball?
I know. They have a little mini Carmelo on their team. His name's Marcus Morris. That fella shoots whenever he gets the ball. It's a black hole. And I'd rather have Marcus Morris 10 times out of 10 over Carmelo Anthony. Morris is tough. Yeah, he's a tough guy. He gives you a little bit of grit on your team. But offensively, I mean, they have plenty of guys where the ball disappears as it is. You're right.
Oh, God, I don't want anything to do with Carmelo. Zero. Zero to do with Carmelo Anthony. And I look at him and say, I can't even believe that. If I were the Celtics, I would have said no out of the gate. The only possible reason to say yes, whether you're whispering off the record or not, is because you want some of the guys on this team looking over their shoulder because you think they're a little too comfortable. And maybe they are. Because that's part of the reason why they've gotten off to the start they've had. Carmelo Anthony, for all the hyperbole, that guy's a loser. He's a losing player. He knows how to do one thing and one thing only. Lose.
Okay, so there's Maz's thoughts on Carmelo Anthony. We'll wrap it up here with some Celtics calls before we hit the top of the hour. And Sunshine, go ahead, Darnell and Quincy. What do you got?
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good.
Before you get to my point, I just want to say I completely agree with Maz, and the thought of adding Melo to this team angers me. But anyways, I just want to say, before the season, I had one concern, and it's extremely evident when I watch these games. Guys like Kyrie, Hayward, Horford, Morris, they kind of know what this team is playing for, and it's to win a ring. And then you got guys like Rozier, Tatum, and Brown, who have their entire careers ahead of them. So it's really tough for them right now to, like, take a back seat, knowing that all three of them have their first big contract ahead of them. And you can tell that the main guys and then the young guys are kind of playing differently for that reason. I don't know. I just wanted to see what you guys thought.
Well, Maz agrees with that.
Totally. Yep. I think that's at the core of it. That you have, because I think age with it and experience bring perspective. And after a while, you become like a Kevin Garnett or a Paul Pierce. You say, I put up a lot of numbers in this league and my team sucks every year and it's no fun. I want to win. So I'll score 17 and I'll give up some shots if we're going to be good. And the young guys don't get that. And I think that's part of the problem.
Luke in Vermont, what's your take?
Brad Stevens is a guy who can fix it. Felger, I've told you this. Coaching matters and style of play matters. Yes, it's about ego. That's the big picture. But you can't play my turn, your turn basketball. And the thing with the starting lineup is driving me crazy. Are those guys struggling? Yes. Tatum and Hayward are not good right now for different reasons, selfishness and health. But that's ultimately the starting lineup you want. You keep talking about too many mouths to feed. How does Golden State make it work with Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Kevin Durant, Iguodala, and Draymond Green? That's basically the same lineup that we are trying to emulate.
Are they still making it work?
Golden State? No, it's falling apart.
I mean, was there almost a fist fight in the locker room the other night out there?
Okay, would you go to four of the next five finals and win two championships?
Yes.
I mean, I would take that.
I'm sort of teasing, but I mean, they are. So Draymond Green's a handful, but isn't he a role guy essentially on that team?
Horford. Draymond is your Horford. Different way. Not the toughness
no.
way.
Marcus Smart is your Draymond Green.
Okay, I'll give you that, but still, here's the thing. Horford doesn't need the ball to be effective. We've talked about what makes him strong. Horford's not a volume shooter guy. And Jaylen Brown needs to be the Iguodala, the guy who guards the other team's best player. He can score 20 points, but that's not his role. He gets garbage points, wide open threes.
Okay, tell him that.
Curry and Kyrie are your equals. Then Hayward Thompson, very different, but shot numbers are similar. And Tatum is the guy who they want to be similar to a KD.
Okay, so I got it, but you know, you want Brown to fill a certain role. Tell him that. This fellow's got delusions of grandeur. So he's, you know, this is the issue, that Iguodala, at his stage of his career, accepts his role.
Exactly.
Does Jaylen Brown?
No.
And I would say even Draymond Green, through all of his problems, has largely accepted his role there as the enforcer or that sort of that piece, the hustle guy. It feels like the Celtics team, they all want to be Steph Curry.
That's what it feels like at the moment. And again, I go to the young guys there because I just think Brown has limitations that, you know, that some of the other young guys don't. And even Rozier. Rozier's got limitations too. Tatum's the one exception. That's the way I should have said it. Tatum's going to be elite. He already is in a lot of ways. So Brown, to me, is going to have to accept more of a role responsibility as he goes forward here. And the problem is that right now, he thinks he's going to be a superstar.
Okay,
folks. And maybe he is, but on this team, he can't be.
Folks, we just gave you 2 straight hours without bitching about the Patriots. 2 straight hours, no Patriots bitching. That's about to end. Because now we're going to talk about the Patriots. But there will be a counter. There will be counterbalance in the studio here in our Town Fair Tire Studios. As a ray of sunshine, Paul Prill from Patriots Football Weekly and sunshine.com will be alongside. We sing Sunshine Day to bring him in. Who's singing this week, Murray?
Well, frequent caller, Cam from Taunton, hit me up on Twitter just a short time ago to ask if Jim Rome could sing Sunshine Day.
Oh, there we go.
And as always, I'll dance for the people.
So, Romy with Sunshine Day, right after Murray's 90-second update. No commercials. Don't go anywhere.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Nas on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.